Welcome to episode 56. 56. We're on a roll. So, Mike Lawrence, welcome.
Thank you, John.
Mike, obviously, as I do with everybody, we know each other already, but do with everybody, I do a little bit of research first to try and find out a little bit more information that might not necessarily be in the public's eye. Yes. I'm only kidding. So what it does say, though, Mike, is that you're a stress management expert, consultant, and integrative therapist.
And that was in the public eye?
That was in the public eye, okay. Yeah. Is that accurate?
It is, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. It's a combination of things, because when I'm working with somebody, you're trying to find out what the problem was. Mm. And so it's bringing all those different elements together and treating a person as sort of one.
Sure.
And so although that we use different titles and I've got lots of qualifications to go along with that, it's just trying to be authentic and just looking and working with people to try to find out what those problems are, whether it be stress or whether it be anxiety, depression, anything like that.
Of course.
It's just getting underneath that,
identifying what it is.
Absolutely.
So you've been doing this for a few years?
Yes, I have, yeah.
Here in Sheffield?
Yeah.
And it says here that you've devoted to excel in three areas. So the sales and marketing management, the holistic health, and is it shiatsu?
Yeah, shiatsu, yeah.
Shiatsu,
yeah.
And then hypnotherapy as well.
Yeah.
It did say that you sought fame and fortune in London, hoping to rub shoulders with the great and the good, which did materialise via a stint at Butlins as a redcoat in Bognor Regis.
Was that in the profile as well?
That was somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, somewhere.
Somewhere online.
That was sneaky, that, wasn't it? And actually, I get asked a lot about that.
Really?
And yeah, a lot of the talks that I do on the radio, podcasts, and it's quite fascinating, because when I was in London, singing Fame and Fortune, and I did Butlins for a few seasons, a phenomenal time.
Yes.
And then went into the leisure industry as a lifeguard. I went into IT, and I just had visions to be a manager.
Right.
So I don't know, it's not that I'm a control freak or anything, I just wanted to be a manager, and be able to make a difference and do various things. However, what I was finding is that I'd put on my CV as a Butlins and put entertainment and red coat.
Yeah.
And I was getting turned down for a lot of things.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was getting turned down for a lot of interviews and I wasn't moving forward. So I looked at my CV, took the critical eye, and I thought, let me just try something. I took it out there and I changed it, and I just put that I was in the leisure industry, okay, and took the word red coat out of it and just put, you know, leisure ascendant and things around that.
Sure. And that changed.
And that changed it, yeah.
It changed it. Really?
And what I found, because what I found is that coming from one place into another, into the local authority and also in the civil service, which I spent a lot of time with, and also the private sector, the IT industry, that you had to be taken seriously.
Oh, and they didn't take it.
And they didn't take it seriously, because once they saw red coat, it was like Jack the Lad having a bit of fun. However, since starting my business and working with the public, I keep getting asked, what are the transferable skills, if any?
Which is where I was leading into, yeah. So tell me a little bit about the red coat. I mean, what did you do as a red coat then?
Entertainment.
Sing.
Dance.
Yeah.
DJ.
Really? Can you sing?
Out of tune.
Hugh Jackman then?
No, far from it. But it's been a child.
Yes.
How
old was you, by the way?
I was in my mid-20s.
Yeah.
Been mid-20s. Really? And so, and the funny thing is, I went down there from Sheffield down to Bognor.
Sure.
And I just got this uniform. I said, what's this for? I said, oh, it's a red car. I said, what am I supposed to do with that?
Yeah.
You know, you put it on. Because we were told just to bring a white shirt, a dicky bow tie, some white socks,
really?
And shoes, and then you get the jacket. And I remember the first few days when you're there and there's people coming up to you asking for your autograph. And then you see that you take a nice little headshot. So I've got the picture now. We should put it up in here.
Yeah. We'll find the picture and I'll put it at the bottom of the
I'll find the picture. And it's strange. And when you actually go to, they've got a shop, and they've got all the heads of Reds in there.
Right.
And you see, and people coming up to you, it's strange, they're coming up to you with a photo, and you say, you sign this for me, Redcoat Mike.
Redcoat Mike, yeah. That was your name as well, wasn't it? Yeah, Redcoat.
Or somebody, you know, you'd have a, you know, in the days when you used to have a pot.
Yeah,
you'd
sign it on your arm.
Sign it on your leg.
Redcoat Mike.
Yeah, and it was great because you were being paid to have fun.
Have fun, yeah.
And so we were, you know, people, you know, I was in Bognor, which is the head office, about 5,000 people, you know, at the height of the season, there's 5,000 people there. And so you'd be, you know, calling bingo, assistant bingo, there'd be shows on there, yeah. There'd be pool parties, and certain programs. Would be there as well. So you've got the stars would come down there as well. They'd be forming like big people like Bobby Crush. Some people might not know who these people are. Yeah. Freddie the Dreamers, right. Darts. You know, the professional darts players would be there and have the heats there. The snooker players would be down there. They'd be having heats for local competitions.
Sure.
Entertaining. And then you had the ballroom people, ballroom dancing, the serious ones for competitions.
Sure.
And then you had the pageant contests as well, Miss Butlins, and yeah, so they'd have different events all over the place. And so, one of the tasks was to escort one of those ladies onto the stage and take them off again, like Miss World.
Yes.
And so, the transferable skills are phenomenal.
I can imagine so. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was you like prior to that? I mean, were you quite a confident kid? Were you a little bit? Were you cocky, arrogant? Were you shy? Like
I thought I was quite confident because from Sheffield, and I was into say Northern Soul, and so I used to dance a lot some of the early jobs I had was in the steel industry, I was in welder.
That boisterous environment.
Yeah, and also Sheffield's a steel city, and so you're tough, you're supposed to be, one of the lads.
One of the lads.
And so, yeah, I thought I was no different from anybody else, sure. But when I went down there, in comparison to the others, I was an introvert.
Sure.
An introvert.
Really?
Yeah, and it was. And I remember.
But you're not an introvert though at all, are you?
Maybe my default position is.
Oh really?
Yeah, because there's those different sides to us all.
Yes.
But going there, it brought out the other part, which I was at first was scared.
Really?
Yeah, I was scared because. You know, imagine when you go on a dance floor at one of the nightclubs, which a lot of them shut down in Sheffield now.
And Boxes. You'd be,
yeah. Romeo and Juliet and Isabel. And you'd be...
Josephine's.
There we go now. Yeah. And you'd be at the bar, you know, your mates and everything, the music's on, I'm going to dance until, you've had a few drinks inside, And you... But when you go there...
Sure. That's your job.
That's your job. You're leading it.
Yeah.
And you are actually, whilst you're in various areas like the ballroom and everything, then people are sat down in their families having a drink, and right from the babies right through to the grandmas and the granddads, and they're all, big groups of them.
Yeah.
And the dance floor might be empty. And the DJ is playing some music.
And you've got to get up.
But what you do, you go around.
You're gathering them,
and so it's not asking them, excuse me, would you like to participate in doing some dancing?
You're saying you have to participate.
You're getting up, and even if in a wheelchair, people disabled and things like that, take the brakes off, and you'd help them to get on and all the different things that you're doing it for out of compassion.
Yes.
The wonderful thing that used to happen every week on a Friday, and even when they speak about it, you change because you can just see it. Imagine on a Friday night, we do something called the au revoir.
Right.
So all the redcoats would come up, they'd be introduced about 12 o'clock on a Friday night because everyone would leave on the Saturday morning.
Sure, yeah.
and it was like Vera Lynn, We'll Meet Again, God's, you know, the national anthem and everything. Then everyone, and then it would st- and we're all there at the front, and it was like, you know, you know, I don't know where, and you're doing all that, you're doing all this, what, and singing all the movie,
all of it,
and it comes to the end, and then everyone's clapping, and there's a trickle of people, of different people that you've touched, you've had a conversation with, and even if it's just somebody walking from one venue to another and say good morning. You know, because we were talking off, you know, off camera beforehand, how things have changed about loneliness and how people are communicating through Facebook, but that face-to-face, that social interaction,
it's fading
away. But we were encouraged to do that,
of course,
because it doesn't take long, it doesn't take much, just to put your head up and look at somebody and just to say good morning, how are you, and that,
and it's beautiful.
It is, and it make, and that. Because they might go back to their room, they might not come out.
Change the day.
And every time you then see them and spot them,
they recognise you.
They recognise them. So at the end of the evening, and you get dribs and drabs of different people coming up to you saying, "You made my week. You made my week."
It must be quite emotional.
It was. We cried. We were crying because the first few weeks you're there, you're crying.
I can imagine so.
And then what you're then doing, which sounds kind of, it sounds perverse, is that you have to stop yourself. You have to stop yourself. And so until the end of the season, you're stopping yourself.
Yeah.
Until you all leave.
And then it's waterworks.
Yeah, it's waterworks big time,
Because so it's a family, I suppose, isn't it?
It is, it is. And so so if, when I was talking about earlier, you know, how I had to take that off my CV and how I had to be straight-laced and go into management and to fit into a an environment which was more of a case of head down, very serious and lead by example and very stoic. Whereas now, what I'm able to do with my clients is to be myself.
Of course.
It's to be myself, and they see it in me and just by having a talk. And so, you know, it's like, you know, life coaching and hypnotherapy, it's all about getting into rapport.
Yeah.
And so as soon as people come in or you see them in different places, you're fascinated by them. How are you? What are you doing? And how is it feeling? And all the rest of it, making people feel, you know, sort of good. So you're just taking that through.
Of course.
You're just taking that through.
So like, what was the key takeaway from you then coming in? How long was you there, by the way?
Only 2 years, and that was tough to come away.
Sure.
Some of my friends, they were there for, you know, 5 years, some for 10.
Really?
Yeah.
So in the 2 years, what did you take from that then? What kind of skill did it develop in you, would you say?
Probably people skills.
Yeah.
People skills. But I wasn't aware of it then.
Sure.
I wasn't aware of it then. It was only, I think, after the first season, the entertainment's manager came up to me and he said to me, "I want you to come back next year."
Right.
And he said to me, "You have grown so much."
Right.
Yeah. I didn't see it myself.
Yeah.
I've seen you doing the Gay Gordons, the Foxtrot, the two-step with, you know, with various people, or saying hello and shaking hands, and from, you know, little babies, you know, all the way through. All the way through. But you weren't aware of it yourself.
Of
it's only when people, you know, he pointed out to me. So the, it was people skills, because, you know, I went into management, and most of my life I was in management before I set up my business. And one of the things that stayed with me is those people skills and the communication, and so I've been able to build high performing teams, you know, based upon that sort of
stuff. Incredible. I mean, I bet there's some stories as well, isn't there? That's a different show, isn't it? That one. Story of the red coat.
Stories, but it's good timing, actually. Even though it's not the 57th show; it's the 56th show. All these different varieties.
Yes.
But it's actually with 12 other red coats yesterday.
Oh.
We had a get together.
We were just saying about this, wasn't it?
I was saving that. Yeah, I was saying that for you. We had a get together.
Sure.
And we hadn't met. We try to meet once a year now.
Yeah.
Obviously you lose contact with everybody, and then I think it was just through Facebook. One links with one and then the other, and it snowballed, and it's like, oh, let's get together.
Incredible.
And so we got together for the first time about 6 years ago, and it was just
chaos.
It was just so emotional. And every time we meet now, and one of them actually last year went to a wedding, I think his two got married.
Really?
And it was like personal to them, but also very personal to us.
Did
as
you get
well.
Up and perform for them?
We didn't need to. They had one of these secret singers. I don't know if you've seen those secret singers and that. And we talk about it, and we were there yesterday, and we're very sort of tight, very close, because we could be children.
Yes.
We could be children because, you know, we are. Although we're adults, there's a child in us. Mm. And a lot of the problems that as adults, as society, are faced with is those inner child problems.
Yeah.
Things that haven't been dealt with because we're going through, people are going through a divorce, they're living on their own.
Yeah.
They're over, you know, they're obese, and stress, depression, anxiety becomes bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
And we're not, and a lot of people.
We're trying to deal with it as a child, not
yeah,
as an adult.
Yeah, as adults. Yeah. And a lot of those things that was faced with either being abused or bullied, or just somebody saying, you're not good enough, you'll never be the great John Cove, you're not going to have all these properties, you're not going to be something.
Sure,
but it's based upon their paradigm of the world, not yours. And so some people are taking that, and so they're setting their bar quite low.
Of course.
And in, and so
they
many
don't realize how much of an impact it has on them for
huge,
their entire life.
Yeah. Huge. And it's great for the people that come and see us, or the organizations where the groups, large groups of those people are in there, and you can see them smile, you can see the shift that they make.
Yes,
and you
yes.
think to yourself that, why does it have to be this way?
I know.
Why has it got to be, why is it me that way? But a lot of it goes back. I had somebody who came to see me for consultation recently, and was having problems in work.
Right.
And it might have been his wife or his partner that said, you need to come and see this person. But typically, you know, the blokes, they come in, don't they? And there were problems.
There were
problems in work.
Of course.
But he weren't dealing with them. And he was moving away from them. And I think in the end he said, yeah, I think we'll deal with it. It's sort of like internally.
Yeah.
But it stems back in a lot of cases from the past, and a lot of people don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
And they put a lid on it.
Okay, it's going to just fix itself.
It fixes itself, but it doesn't, and you just it just manifests all the time.
And then it comes out a different way. It comes out in illness or aggression, or you know, like they resent people.
Yeah, yeah. And in the language, it comes out on the social media posts.
Yes.
The clothes they wear, the colours that they choose.
Sure, everything.
Everything, the cars, the holidays that they have, the friends that they...
Is there a pattern there, do you think? Like, would they be... Is it a certain colour? Is it a certain car? Is it a certain holiday? Is it a certain thing that they do? Is it always manifest the same way?
Generally speaking, because they will stay in this bubble.
Yes.
And they won't move out of that, and so they'll tend to maybe just go to the same place all the time, the same holiday.
Right.
They'll take the same route to work all the time.
Yes.
Because it'll feel uncomfortable to take a different route, and if they do, they might get lost.
Right.
Eating the same restaurants, have the same diets, even though that diet might not be beneficial for them, and it's not giving the nutrients that their body actually
needs.
And
what would be the usual culprit to cause all that then? What's the main thing there, what they're not dealt with?
The main thing that they're not dealt with, it's probably just taking a step back and just, because we all know internally, we all know what it is, we all know what the problems are, but it's that honesty.
Right.
That honesty of facing it.
Sure.
I give an example. I was speaking to a couple of people over the weekend about they've had some counselling, lots of therapy, and saying it won't work for me. And it was amazing because it was like a group sort of therapy session.
Sure.
And they've tried different things, but all the way through, one of my colleagues noticed that somebody kept using the word called can't.
Yes.
I can't.
Yep.
I can't. Mm. I won't. Mm. Anything. And over a period, you know, and we went on for about, you know, for several hours, and it was really quite emotive, and it was quite, you know, very, very good. and you allow somebody to talk, and as somebody's talking, you can hear.
Yes.
There's certain groups phrases, of phrases words, and pattern, words and yeah. patterns that yeah. they use. And so if a time aside, you won't.
Yes.
You won't.
I chain. Can't.
You can't. Yeah. You yeah. won't. Yeah. And it's a case of, I can't help you. We can talk, we can chat, support,
yeah.
but in order to make that shift, you have to want to do it for yourself.
Yes.
And until you want to do it for yourself, because I'm just that conduit. I just facilitate, yeah. and I bring the tools, the A game, my knowledge to that session. Then it's down to yourself to take that action.
Absolutely.
And if you're not willing to or don't want to, that's fine.
Yeah.
But you will always stay where you are.
Yes. You can show them the door, but then yeah, they've got to walk through it.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, is probably good with therapy and,
yeah.
and all the things that you do there, Joe. Yeah. The fact that they've come to see you, they've yeah. actually made that change.
Yeah, yeah.
Or certainly some step towards making the change by admitting that they need to speak to you.
That's right. And you feel honoured and grateful that they've yeah. made that step and they're wanting to, even if they may not go on to do anything with you, mm. at least they've come through, and then in a consultation we'll just talk through mm. what their challenges are, what their yeah. problems are, and then I'll put together a plan, which may just be various talking therapies, or it could be or various holistic therapies, or a combination of the two.
Of course, yeah. Mm. Yeah, incredible. So then after the red coats, let's come back onto this one for a second then. So you developed, you grew as a person.
Yeah.
And you wanted to get into management,
yeah.
and you did. You spent several years in management. You were, what did it say here? So like PC World, London yeah. Transport. You spent a number of years in the management. Yeah. Like what was the kind of thing that happened there to make you move?
I think you're always. I'm the type of person that I give my all. Any job that you do, you give your all.
Mm.
And then sometimes it gets to a point where you've learnt everything that you want to do, and the time feels right to sort of move on.
Right.
Because you want to improve yourself, you want to better yourself, sure. whether it be financially, emotionally, and spiritually.
Right.
So PC World was amazing because I wanted to get into computers.
Right.
Because back in the days when you had Gateway 2000s and Dells and...
Oh yes.
Yeah.
When Mac was Macintosh.
Yeah, yeah. It was Mac was Macintosh, and you've got laptops which were selling for £3,000 and £4,000.
Green screen.
Yeah. Working through DOS and Windows.
Yeah.
I was fascinated by it all, and sure. I loved it, and there was that thirst for knowledge, and I had periods working in those places through university as well, and so I've always wanted to be very good at what I do, but I also wanted to back that up with knowledge, sure. with evidence-based as well. So yes. it wasn't a case of going to PC World, learning about computers, learning how to sell. I wanted to know how people tick. And so I was fortunate in those days as well, the different jobs that I had, I was trained.
Got you. Yeah.
I paid money out of my pocket to go to university to learn about computers and how to learn about networks and how to change hard drives and everything, because I was just curious and fascinated by it. But then on the other side, it was a case of learning about body language, learning about human behaviour, communication,
sure.
And then you start reading books.
Yeah.
By the scholars like John Covey, not John Covey, Stephen Covey. You wrote a book, haven't you? That was close.
Seven Habits of the Size Not Mine, though.
Yeah, Seven Habits of Successful People. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
that's not mine, by the way. It's for my readers and watching. I didn't write that book. No. Jokingly though, we do refer to Stephen Covey as Uncle Covey. We're not related as far as we're aware, but yeah. If I'm going to have an uncle, it might as well be someone like him.
Yeah, and just people like what's his name? Somebody Blanchard.
Ken
Blanchard. Yeah, the 1 Minute Manager.
Yeah, brilliant book.
Yeah, Bill's Incredible Teams.
Right.
Managing the Monkey, And you get into all that, and it was like, wow.
So, I mean, like, what made you become aware and open-minded enough to take on board? Because we're talking about, like, a growth mindset now, aren't we? We're changing. You're making the change to see the change.
Mm.
And that's available for everybody, but not everybody's prepared to listen to it or read it or study it, let alone pay for it themselves.
Yeah.
So what changed in you to make that a thing?
I was just ambitious. Mm. I was just ambitious. I just liked what they were saying, and also what I did also was, in going to universities, reading those books, I tried them out. And a lot of people didn't. They'd read it and there'd be a fear of actually trying it out. You know, they say you go on a course, and over a period of time, that information evaporates unless you put it into action. And the beautiful things that if we go on these courses, going to university, and it's sad nowadays because when you go into companies or you speak to directors or you even go networking and you speak to managers, they talk about the stress, they talk about the mental health, they talk about absenteeism, presenteeism, and all the problems that are there. Then you start, then ask them if I'm facilitating, what training are you on? Then they're not paying for it.
Sure.
And so the managers aren't empowered, they've not got the skills and abilities in many organisations. Whereas when I went to university, I'm benchmarking myself, I'm coming out of the work environment and I'm with other people from different sorts of backgrounds, whether it be in civil engineering, or whether I'm catering, libraries, and all those different places. And then I'm benchmarking my knowledge with theirs and triangulating that. And so then I'm able then to go back into my environment where I was working with and try it, because I've learned from somebody else, you know, for whether it be a disciplinary or improving somebody's performance. This is what we did and it worked there.
Right. And what happened as a result of this then? So you went and
grow.
What, in terms of what, in the business, in the company?
Because all the companies, I think most of all the companies that I worked with, I got promoted.
Right.
Unless I came in at a very senior level. But what I was also finding is that the more senior I become, a lot of the managers around me didn't have the level of qualifications or that background.
Yes.
So then I was being utilised to train the other managers.
Them as well,
And it was always a case of spend time with Mike. Spend time with Mike. You can learn from Mike. Right. He's got a lot of experience and got a lot of knowledge.
Fantastic.
Which I wouldn't have probably grown if I'd stayed in Sheffield.
Right. Or started to read and
Because initially when I left Sheffield and, you know, when I finished Butlins, my plan was to stay there for maybe a year or two and come back up because I had the World Student Games and maybe get a job at the World Student Games.
Right.
But when I got down to London and you become engrossed in the way of life and, you know, the lifestyle and the trappings down there.
Yes.
It's that one I'm coming back for.
But you did.
I did. Eventually, 20 odd years later.
Really? Yeah. So you were 20 years in London?
Yeah, 20 odd years in London.
Why come back?
It was just life.
Sure.
Yeah, it was just life circumstances. And I used to run a business with my ex-wife.
Sure.
And divorced.
Right.
So therefore, you make that split. So got another role with another organisation up in Doncaster. And so it was a small sort of village.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, well, there's Doncaster, there's Leeds, there's this person, Sheffield.
Sheffield, let's go home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But my goal is still to go back down to London.
You still want to go
I commute to London quite a lot because I've got two daughters there, I've got lots of friends there.
Sure.
And also got sort of business contacts because this weekend on Saturday I'm going to be exhibiting and talking at the Pan Afro. I think it's a Pan-African Health and Wellbeing Show.
Right, okay.
And I'm doing a half an hour slot on stress.
Brilliant. Brilliant, Mike. Brilliant. Yeah. So, I mean, what I've got here as well is that, you know, during all of this training, this management and stuff, you actually went on to you had two highly successful spells. I can't speak now.
That's all right.
You had two highly successful spells at two leading Harley Street cosmetic beauty clinics.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one that we've just referenced.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The business you set up with your wife.
Yeah.
And this is a business that specializes purely just in cosmetics, is it?
Yeah, it's cosmetics. It's permanent makeup.
Okay.
And initially it was balancing. Bringing up the children, going to university, I was working, and then the business, and she was a beautician, mm-hmm. and then from being a beautician, had some money, and from an incident, and went off and learnt something called permanent makeup, and at the time it wasn't popular,
sure,
and when you went out to get some PR,
right.
A lot of the PR. Agents were saying we couldn't sell this into the media,
right?
And so, to be fair, for a lot of work that she did and broke down things and made a shift, mm-hmm. to the point where there's an article that was placed in. She met a journalist from the Sunday Times Star magazine, and that broke. And then after that,
business just rocketed.
It rocketed,
right.
to the point where I gave up my. My career in management at a company in London to join forces, because right. initially the business was run from the home, and so I took it out of the home.
Sure.
Took it out of the home, and I built the back office.
Right, okay.
So through PC World, sure. and my interest in computers, I networked the whole thing together.
Really?
Putting in the telephony system.
Yeah.
CRM. Marketing digital, whole lot, and got everything running with turnkey. And so.
And this is a company that's well known. The company.
Yeah, it's a company is well known and became one of the top companies in the UK and one in Europe for doing these types of cosmetic treatments.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Very well known.
So then you stayed there for a period of time. Did you come out of there because the relationship had failed, or?
No, not really. The company that I moved on to was in a similar
similar sort of space,
but they were more focused on training. So whereas where it was with my ex-wife, it was more around treatments based,
sure.
and so she did treatments, right. and another person, be doing treatments and everything with an element of training. Mm. Whereas this other organisation was part of a bigger group.
Got you.
It was a bigger group, so. When I started, there was probably about 30 members of staff. When I left, there was probably 140, 150 with different departments, and
sure.
they specialised in different areas.
So was you still with your wife, relationship-wise, when you went to this other company?
No.
Really? So, no. I mean, would that cause friction?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you okay to talk about this friction?
I guess within the industry, it's... Everyone well known as biggest at that level.
Sure.
There is, the big hitters, the big companies, and we were one of those.
Right.
And so, by me going to another company was seen as one of our rivals.
Right. Okay.
So therefore, me going there and showing up over there, then sure. it caused a little bit of unrest.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is that being resolved?
Yeah. That was resolved. That was resolved, and it was fine. But I initially, when I joined the company, I wasn't going head to head.
Yeah.
I wasn't going head to head, and
sure.
so
it was a different space.
Yeah, I was in a different space, and so it was in the same industry, mm-hmm. but I was going B2B, business to business.
And the other one was.
It was B2C,
consumer.
Consumer.
Right. Right.
And so I was in that space first. And again, I was working because this was a growing business.
Sure.
And again, they're using my background skills.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's a case of IT. We need to set up IT and set up email addresses for all the different companies' email signatures. I ran HR.
Right.
I ran HR for a period of time.
Which ties into your management.
Yeah. Ran HR. So all the different skills that I'd. It was like a perfect job because all the different skills that I'd learned in different places
sure.
in management. Because a lot of times in management and in life, you've got your CV.
Mm-hmm.
It's a case of, that's all in the past.
Yes.
But you're paying for somebody in terms of what they do now. And so in that role there, I was able to utilise lots of different things and bring some of the the successes that I'd learnt in the previous business and elsewhere into
bring it all together.
Yeah, bring that sort of like all together.
So I mean, like, I imagine at the time, I mean, there must have been a lot of things going on in your head. Like, your relationships failed.
Yeah.
The business that you were once part of was no longer part of, which was a successful business.
Yeah.
You started from scratch.
Yeah.
I mean, like, how did you get through that? Do you know what I mean? Did you suffer, or are you quite headstrong? I mean, what happened to yourself mentally?
I had some good advice, because obviously went through a divorce, which ended up in high court as well. And I got some great advice from somebody who was going through a similar sort of thing, but in a different way.
Right.
And says, you want to do three, get involved in, you need to do focus in three areas. Keep fit, get fit. Have some fun, watch comedy and everything. And find an interest.
Right.
Find a new interest. So you're able to manage what you're going through, transitioning from relationship, transitioning from into the business that you work with and it's close to for a period of time, moving into a different area and starting all again.
Of course.
And starting all again. And I did all those three things.
Yeah.
And that
helped you.
Oh, and it helped massively. Yeah. And so I was having some hypnotherapy with myself, I was doing some NLP coaching, and learnt a wide range of different therapies.
Sure.
And so you're sort of self-healing, and also learning and developing a new skill time as well.
And I mean, like, what it says is that you went to see Tony Robbins in London, which I've never been. I've heard it's an incredible experience.
It is.
I think I might go to Birmingham next year, actually. Yeah. But then you trained to become a professional life coach. You studied NLP, Reiki, isn't it? Master as well.
Yeah.
Oh. Clinical hypnosis, cognitive behavioral therapy, and a long list of cognitive integrative therapies, including intuition and mediumship.
Yeah.
So you really went in hard then, didn't you?
And on the list there, these are punctuated throughout time, and so it wasn't, everything didn't happen all at once.
Yes.
And so these are modalities and skills and things that you do over a period of time.
Of course. But great skills to have.
They are. And like I mentioned beforehand, it's the application of them.
Yes.
So it's all well and good, because I go on, you know, various courses, networking courses, and they talk about therapies and people doing, you know, therapies, coaching, and there's not many people that you come across who's just got one qualification. Right. You tend to find that they've got quite a few, because I think we've got that insatiable appetite to, you know, if you're working, if you're doing, say, Swedish massage, to want to learn how to do an Indian head.
Right, yes, yes.
Or want to do a shiatsu or Reiki, and it's like, no, Reiki master.
Yes. Not just the base, I want to go.
Yeah,
I want
to do all the way, because it's the next one up. And there's a danger, and I fell foul of it myself.
Okay. How do you recognise that when it's becoming a danger? Is there a hack? Is there a way to recognise it?
No, there is. It's money.
That's a good place. Yeah.
Yeah, money, and money flow.
Right.
What you're paying out and what you're receiving, because you come across coaches and therapists say that, you know, they're not able to. One of the reasons why, because there's a lot of people, because, you know, set up a networking group. Don't know if he was involved in one beforehand, but there hasn't been many networking groups for therapists in Sheffield, and so myself and a lady called Susan Smith set one up, and we had 13 people come to the first one. And there's a lady, do you know the Still Point in Montgomery Road, Nether Edge, around that point where they do massage and lots of therapists there?
No, I'm not sure. Maybe.
And there's people all ages just saying, this is great, this is good. And many of these people are doing therapies part time.
Sure.
And part-time, and sometimes it's not even part-time, it's casual.
Right.
But they just love to be able to do it full-time.
Right.
They'd love to be able to do it sort of full-time. But the carry on doing courses.
Of course.
Because
they feel that they need to be better qualified in order to... Yeah, it's the imposter syndrome, I suppose they call it, don't they?
Yeah, but there's a point where it got cut off, and I think somebody mentioned this to me probably a couple of years ago, and they said to me, yeah, you've got all these qualifications on the wall, and you've got all those in your cabinet, and it might have some title on my name, integrated stress expert, and various other things on. But then it's the case of, has any of the companies that you've worked with asked to see any of those?
Yes.
Has any of
Not one. Yeah.
And clients, has any of those clients, since you've set me up business up, whether it be part-time or full-time, has any of those asked you?
Not one, no.
You know, an inquiry over the weekend, and somebody, I'm doing some work with somebody, and I said, do you do Reiki? And I said, yes, I do. And so I'm doing some work with her now at the moment in time, and then she might, you know, come through, or we'll take that further, and she might want me to do some Reiki.
Sure.
And I'd say to her, why do you need the Reiki? And because I could be doing something which isn't Reiki, it could be a combination of different things.
Yes.
And then, but if I didn't do Reiki and I was being asked for it a lot, then I might think, I better go and learn Reiki.
Learn it, yes.
Just because.
True.
Yeah, so I think it's just been having that control.
Of course.
And saying, no, it's time to serve, provide the service that I've got with the skills that I've got. And they're getting that balance.
We see this all the time though in business, that so many people will try to set a business up first and then get the clients after, rather than getting a client first and then building the business. You know, and I think that's where people get things wrong. I see it all the time. They'll go out, they'll have a big fancy website built, they'll get all the nice literature and marketing material and business cards and all this kind of stuff, but they don't have a single client just yet.
Yeah.
And I said, well, why don't you find a client first?
Yeah.
And then pay for the other stuff after. Do you know, like, get proof of concept.
Yeah.
And then so, and that's a very grey area. I mean, there's a lot more to go into it than that, but I think there's a lot of people get it wrong.
The majority.
Yeah.
Majority. Because there's no... Yeah, you can go. We go networking. If there are groups, you've got the Chamber of Commerce. Mm. You've got a lot of support networks now. There used to be funding available for small businesses, and a lot of that funding and grants have gone. And so through and the various organ and Sheffield's pretty good actually. Mm. The support that they've got. Yeah. Sheffield's in the city region.
Sheffield City Region.
They're pretty good.
I think the problem with a lot of the stuff, and I mean, I'm a big advocate of networking. I think it's incredible, but everyone's selling. Networking.
Yeah.
Do you know? So someone's always going to sell you a website or some SEO or some digital marketing or some training or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Even if it's not necessarily going to be the right thing for you at that moment in time, because they're still trying to find a way to make the money themselves.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the danger that the new business sometimes have to be very mindful of.
True. But and unless like you're able to dissect it.
Yeah.
And have that goal, why are you going there?
Totally.
Are you going there because
you've been told to?
You've been told to. You've been going there because you are wanting to get some business.
Yeah.
But I've, you know, been members of BNI and there's all the BNI light type of events that you can go to, and there is a skill. There is a, you know,
communication.
Yeah, it's communication.
Yeah. Which is fine. I mean, you got trained early, didn't you, with the red coat stuff? So. So I mean, like coming back onto. Everything that you do now then, so the stress management, the consultant and integrated therapies. I mean, like, let's look at stress. I mean, what would you say, especially now, what's a common cause of stress?
And then I remember listening to, I think we talked about this off air beforehand in terms of the gentleman that you interviewed before in regards to sort of stress. And overall, I try to keep it simple. And it's the inability to be able to cope.
Right.
What may... stress you may not stress me and vice versa.
Sure.
And it'll manifest in different ways. So it could be somebody getting late for an appointment. Somebody be quite happy to get there late and make the apologies and everything, but someone get worried and stressed.
Right, okay.
And so then the driving then becomes an erratic.
Of course.
And then they can't get anywhere to park.
Yep.
and these the things sort of like all you know
stack up.
Yeah, it kind of like stacks up, and then they continue throughout the day to focus on it.
Sure.
They focus on it, and they don't let it go.
So what can they do to combat that?
They can do some breathing techniques, They can do sometimes people use these apps.
You know,
these like Headspace.
Headspace and Calm,
which are pretty good. Or just to find a moment, because if you're working in an office environment, they can just, on a coffee break, comfort break, you know, just walk outside. Just walk outside.
Just break that kind of routine that they're in.
Break the routine and just close their eyes.
Sure.
And just breathe.
Yeah.
And just change. You know, they might go to the same restaurant, coffee shop all the time. They might eat in the canteen sometimes. Just walk away and just go off and just chill and relax. Sometimes people nowadays have got their headphones on, a bit of Spotify, and it's just breaking that cycle, breaking that pattern.
Yeah.
And also sometimes making a list of the things that stress you, what those stresses are.
Yeah, so you can identify it.
Yeah, identify it. And then put next to it some positive things that you can actually do, or some positive activities. Then you've got other things like yoga, Pilates, Tai Chi, Qi Gong, going to the gym.
Yeah, all those things
help. Yeah, they all help.
Yeah.
But I think the key thing is not to suffer with silence. Talk to somebody about it, even if they go to the GP or a friend.
But people don't know, do they?
No.
Why?
No. Women do.
Yeah.
Men don't. Yeah. No, men don't.
Is that a macho thing?
It's macho. It's ego.
Yeah.
Men don't go to the dentist. Don't go to the doctors.
Sure.
And for men, it's seen as a sign of weakness.
Of course.
And
is it though? Is it a sign of? Do you think it's a sign of weakness? Do you think that's a label that we've created? I don't know if this is true, by the way. I mean, but. Is it that we just think, well, it's not a sign of weakness, it's just that I'm busy doing stuff and then I can just get on with it?
We're poor at looking after ourselves.
Yeah.
We're poor at looking after ourselves. I think that sometimes when people might talk about, we'll spend more time looking for a holiday.
This is true.
Yeah, we spend more time looking for a holiday and preparing where we go and the outfits and getting into those the nice shorts or the bikinis before we go away, but yet throughout the year
we don't do it for ourselves.
And you know, with men, we put ourselves last. And I think also the outlets that we used to have in many places have gone, because there's now parity with women. When started with my parents, and didn't work. She worked after a period of time, and so they stayed at home.
Right.
So the women are working, and so it means that in the family environment, the men have to, and they are, but they didn't. They weren't the main breadwinners.
Right.
And so now there's a collaborative approach to actually working.
Of course.
Whereas previously, the men go out. You play football, five-a-side football, seven-a-side football. Right. In the local park, and there's a sports centre, darts after work, or a bit of pool after work.
Down the pool with the friends.
Yeah, and a few beers.
Yeah.
And that was probably cathartic.
Sure.
And so
that's not happening.
Right, okay. Saturday, you go and play football.
Yeah.
You play football.
And that's not happening.
That's not happening.
So it's a spiral effect.
Although that. Going to work and get pressure and the stress by playing football, all those things are flying. You kick into whatever it is out of people.
Of
you come off there, you have a few beers, and it's gone.
It's gone. Yes. Yeah.
But
that was your therapy. Yeah.
And now all go out and play squash or badminton. That.
Sure.
Whereas now we're working long hours. We're taking our work home with us. Mm. We're connected.
Never switching off.
We're not switching off. We're going home and everything. Mm. And those outlets, I think men had the kind of like imploded and shut down.
Of course.
Mm.
Makes sense. Makes total sense. So how can people have a better quality of life then? What can people do as a whole? Women, men, children, what can we do as human beings to have a better quality of life?
It's two things. Do things as a family.
Mm.
Communicate.
Yes.
How many times now? And I think that there's no magic pill. And I think you just look back as you and I how we were brought up in terms of, you know, we used to sit down and have a meal together. Whereas now a lot of times you're finding the kids aren't not around.
Sure.
And they might be having meals in their rooms.
Yeah.
We've got TVs in each room.
Yeah.
So we're not sort of like communicating.
Yeah.
We're not sort of like
communication. Communication's a major thing.
I think communication is the number one thing, and also maybe as tough as things are, is to have that family time where you may plan something special, you know, once a month or on a regular basis, and to do various things, and to take on board. I think that everyone's different sort of opinions and views, and reach out to people within your community, get to know your neighbours. We talked earlier about loneliness. Get to know your neighbours and who are they?
Yeah.
You know, and if you, because I know, especially when I was living in London, you got people either side. The only time that you saw them was at Christmas, when they used to put trees up around the area, and they'd serve some mead for the people, and then you'd come out and everyone's talking, having the mead, and says, "Oh, you know, I see you every morning when you pull out the car and wave, and it's so nice that everyone's coming out here and talking. We should talk more and do
often,
things."
Yeah,
as soon as Christmas is over, the trees are down.
Not seeing again for
you. Not seeing again for another year. But it's that camaraderie, it's the communication, and it's the being visible, because, you know, when you used to queue up at the bus stops, people used to talk.
Yeah.
Now then the iPads. And listening to music. Whereas beforehand, in the stories that I used to tell when I used to go down to London, they said, "Oh, what's it like in Sheffield and in the Shires?" I said, "It's great. People are so friendly."
Yeah.
You know, you could be stood at a bus stop, and you know, maybe a lady or somebody's there saying, "Oh, it's the weather's good. You know, not too good today." You're talking.
Sure. You're just getting communication.
You could go into a pub, and some people could have just seen you stood at the bar, and once you stood at the bar, they come over and says, "Oh, we haven't seen you here before." And I said, "Yeah," and then they recognise the London. You know, there's a bit of a twang in the accent somewhere. I said, "You're not from around here, are you?"
Yeah.
You
know? It's a conversation.
Yeah,
well, so.
and they said, "Come here, lad. You know, have a pint with us."
Yeah, yeah, I love that.
Yeah, and a lot of that is changed. A lot of that is gone, and I think that community spirit, reach out to people in the community.
The entire pub culture has changed. There's no pub culture no more, is there?
No, because they've gone into because people are drinking at home.
Yeah.
You know, people are drinking more and more at home.
Sure.
And the pubs are closing down.
Yeah, and when they go to pubs now, they go for food.
Yeah.
And so they don't want to talk to anybody else.
No.
They want to talk to the partner, don't they?
Yeah, because they've had to change the pub.
Yeah.
Sorry, they've had to change so that it's bringing in the family.
Sure.
And not just the, you know, the bloke who used to go there.
Yeah, his mates.
Yeah, and even, you know, you've got some of the kids there with the iPads.
Not even talking.
And I know that some clubs, some restaurants in London, you're banned from being on your phone.
Right.
And they don't allow you to check in.
Yeah.
And they'll come up to you if you've got your phone there and say, "Excuse me, sir, can you put your phone away?"
Oh, they'll actually come over to you.
Yeah.
That won't go down too well, though, would it? As I imagine.
But what it does, though, you've got people talking.
Sure. I think it's a great thing.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure it'll go down too well.
But, you know, you talk, you know, the question is about, you know, what do we change?
Yeah.
And the answers are there already. It's nothing new.
Sure.
It's the things that we used to do, which we don't do as much as we used to do beforehand.
Sure.
You know, nowadays, the phones were plugged into the wall, and you'd be there like this, bringing people up and looking through the address book.
Yeah.
Now we've got you've already got an iPhone or whatever.
Yeah.
There's probably thousands of numbers on there.
So when you were chained to the wall with a phone, you were actually more free than you were without the chain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we knew the numbers. We know those people were swinging them.
You used to memorise the numbers as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And also, but now, unless you're IT savvy, You've got your Samsung, your Galaxy, you know, your Samsung or your iPhone. Yeah. You get a new one. It connects, transfers one to the other, and most people don't delete the numbers. And so, if you imagine over a period of time, 30, 40, 50 years, how many telephone numbers you've got in there?
Oh God!
How many people do you call?
Yeah.
How many people do you know?
None.
Yeah. However, if you was to reach out to some of those people, to find out how they are, what they're doing, they might need your help.
Of course. Like, what a beautiful thing that is if everyone just did that. It was just one a day.
Mm.
If every day they made it a pact, a pledge that they're going to call somebody.
Yeah.
Just to check in.
That'd be great. Or to go, look at the eras, go through that or even further back. Because I was listening to a story on the radio a couple of months ago. And they talk about, who would you call an emergency?
Mm.
And funny enough, my phone went off on Saturday night because I think these iPhones or these smartphones now, the program, if something happens, you press a number and bang, it goes to, the message goes.
Okay.
And so I got this call, I think it was about 10:30 at night, so they're just calling away. It's like, your daughter has put you as a named person in case of an emergency.
All right.
So...
I bet that woke you up quite
Yeah, it did, yeah. So I called to say, you okay?
Yeah.
And she said, no, I'm fine. It's just, but thanks for calling. My phone's playing up. And said, my mum's called me earlier as well, so I need to get this sorted out.
Right.
But I was listening to this story the other day.
Great feature, though.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Especially, if there's a terror attack or anything like that. But somebody was telling me a story the other day of how they were going through some difficult times. And they had a list of 5 people to call and went down, was it 5 or 10? Was that the 5 or 10? Might have been 10. And it was only when they got to the bottom one, and this was late on a Saturday night, somebody picked up.
Really?
And it was fortunate they picked up because he was able to listen.
Yes.
And then this person was suicidal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, suicidal. And it's an MP. In the country.
Oh,
right. And he was able to talk to him.
Right.
Talk to him for about half an hour, 3/4 hour.
Yeah.
And stopped him following through with all his personal following
through
to save his life.
Yeah.
They said, please, 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 whatever you do, you call me the following day to make sure you're all right.
Yeah.
And so he got that call the following day just to check in.
Yeah.
And he was fine.
I think there's a massively powerful message here. People just they need to check in on people, don't they?
They do, and especially blokes, now that we know that we're not as good a communicator as any as women, because we choose not to.
Mm-hmm.
We somewhere along the line, we've made that choice.
Yeah.
So they need to reach out to the friends, the ex-football buddies, the rugby mates, the people they used to play darts with, because you know what? They might be going through the same stuff.
Of course. Well, I've got a professor who's a mentor to me, and he specialises in suicide. And what he says to me, he says that if someone's suicidal, they're not the ones that you've got to worry about.
Mm.
He says, because if they're thinking about it, the likelihood is they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
The ones that do it, just do it.
Absolutely.
And they're the ones that you don't know anything about. And they're the ones that might appear to be happy.
Yeah.
And we see it happening all the time, don't we? In the media.
Yeah.
Where people have done this. It should be what we consider happy.
Yeah.
And then they just take the life.
And it's so sad.
It's so sad.
And because there's a good friend of ours who's a barber, and in Sheffield, he's a black barber, and they are like priests, because everyone goes there. They go there with all the troubles and the woes,
and just listen.
And listen, whether it be, you go there. I'm due actually to go, and they're talking about they put the world to rights.
Yeah.
Football.
Yeah.
Who's going to win the league? Brexit. Ooh,
of course, everything.
I voted Brexit. I voted to come out, and they call me Mr. Brexit.
Yeah.
and not the one where I go to, but another one in another part of Sheffield. He took his life.
Really?
Yeah, he took his life, suffering from mental health.
Really? It's interesting. We've just been saying this about sharing stuff, haven't we? About
you
share things to your barber, you talk to your barber. Well, think about it. Go back to the pub, actually.
Yeah.
The barmaid used to be the kind of therapist.
Yeah.
So you used to share with the problems, the issues, they've been and stuff.
There is.
I suppose we've had that.
Yeah.
But it's who we choose to share it with.
Yeah. Hairdressers You know, yeah. mobile hairdressers, yeah. hairdressers, yeah. women go to the hairdressers. They're where's you going to barbers? You're in and out in a short space of time.
My wife's 4 hours.
And they talk, and they put the world to rights.
Which is therapy.
It's, yeah, it's therapy, and it's great. And so they're doing offloading a lot of the therapists. Sure. No, not sorry, the therapists and the hairdressers. Yeah. They have become counsellors. They are counsellors.
And
yeah, and there's sort of like counselling them. And they're talking openly about the problems. Because men will talk up to a point and they'll back off.
And they'll
back off because, you know, because they don't want to be...
exposing our belly a little bit too much.
Yeah, we're exposing ourselves of fear of being judged.
Of course.
Whereas for the women, they're
very open, though.
They're more open.
Yeah.
And they're more likely to verbalise the problems and deal with them.
Of course. So to wrap things up, Mike.
Yep.
In the media, you've been hailed as having the gift, the go-to person when considering an holistic treatment. So just for the listeners, just tell them a little bit briefly what holistic therapy is.
Holistic therapies is, I guess, just the ability to be able to identify or work through with somebody, either verbally, talking, or through different types of treatments, which is sort of like hands-on, and just to understand what concerns are, what are the problems, and then it's just working out how you can actually help them. And it's just building up that rapport, building up that bond in a certain way. You can't help everybody.
Sure.
But initially, they need to want to help themselves.
They need to sort of help themselves.
And so I just, because, you know, you go to a, you know, because you'll go to a doctor and the doctor will, you know, ask you various questions.
And then hear
the tablets. But I'm a believer that we can heal ourselves in many cases, unless it's something which is terminal or something that's actually physical. So if things aren't physical, because I think it's about 55% of first-time consultancies at the doctors are for medically unexplained symptoms,
which are these things
which don't show up on scans.
Right.
So we then utilise, because our parents, you know, when we were young and we had a problem, you know, or we didn't feel well, what we go to bed.
Yeah,
if you're not well, what do? You go to bed, you go to sleep, the body's healing itself.
Yes.
So if you're able, so what I do, I'm able to either through talking, say some nice words or some not so nice words, which might change your emotions. Because as we're speaking, there might be, you'll ask me a question and it triggers a memory which is tied to an emotion.
Of course.
You'll say to me, "What was Butlins like?"
Ah.
Yeah. And they're the same thing. And so, and then, you know, as I talk about it, and so I can feel this energy that goes down my arm.
Yeah.
Because it's like, those are good feelings, those are good emotions.
Like anchor to that feeling.
Yeah. So you imagine then you've got that in your hands. You've got the power of able to use it through verbally. And so when you're doing treatments, you're connecting all those together.
Yeah.
You're connecting all those together. And as we showed, and, you know, one of these charts over here, and so the charts there, people are wanting to know. Say beforehand, it was a case of what is holistic therapy, and I've got a headache, and how
it's
can
it's connected
you...
to much part, much more than you think.
Absolutely, and it's just that ability to be able to find out what's causing that headache, or find out what's causing that the tennis elbow, or the golfer's elbow, or the
housemaid's knee.
Yeah, the housemaid's knee, or the. Is that a cartilage? Is it arthritis? Sciatica?
Yeah.
You know, these
Where's
sort of...
Where's it stem from?
Where's it stem from?
Yeah.
Because many of the, you know, many of the non-complementary or non-alternative will go to the various places and put a cortisone injection there or do various other things, whereas...
It might be linked to another part of your body.
Yeah. Or a memory or an emotion.
Right, yeah.
And so that's what you're looking to get rid of.
Mike, it's been absolutely wonderful speaking to you.
No, thank you, John. Thank you very much.
Where can people find out more about you?
They can find out from me from where we are here, which is Redlands Business Centre in Tapton, which is Broom Hill in Sheffield. I've also got a website, which is www.mikelawrence.co.uk. You can find me on LinkedIn.
Yep.
And also got a business page on Facebook, which is Mike Lawrence Holistic Therapies. So you can contact me through all those different areas.
Fantastic. We'll put a link in the description as well. Brilliant. For all those. Mike, again, thank you so much for your time. It's been wonderful.
Yeah, no, thank you, John. Cheers.